Holmgren.
Here.
Meg Litster.
Here.
Carrie Case.
Here.
Katie Holmland.
Here.
Jay Lister.
Here.
You have four.
Okay. Thank you. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I will move on to the approval of the agenda. I'll make a motion to approve March 8th, 2022 agenda. Can I have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded by Jay. Any discussion? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Next student presentation. Ooh, we have third grade students.
They're not here. They did a Google slideshow, and so it'll be cast up onto the screen.
Okay.
And I have not run it through, so we're going to see if it goes.
But we do have a couple of fabulous third grade teachers here. Oh, yeah.
Do you mind saying something before we put it on, just because for people that are listening, what it's about?
Sure. I mean, this will go through the whole thing.
Oh, it will? Okay.
Okay.
The third grade students at Stedman Elementary School have been learning about cetaceans. During the past 6 weeks, they each chose one whale to investigate. The goals of this project were twofold. First, to have them apply their learning about cetaceans to a species in which they were particularly interested. And second, to practice the process of researching, note-taking, writing, and sharing their learning through a digital format. Mrs. Midkiff and Mrs. Martin worked in collaboration with Ms. Cotta in the library and Mrs. Cabral in special ed. Together, the students looked through nonfiction and World Book Online for their information. They took that information and wrote their notes. Turned their notes into sentences and edited their information. They also put the information into a digital format using Google Slides. Creating a presentation gave them opportunities to practice many skills, including creating a Google slideshow, inserting text boxes, finding and importing photos, content, and citing sources. They also had an opportunity to practice their keyboarding and explore text features and how that relates to readability. They used their share settings to share their final presentation with their teacher in the class, and they had fun selecting different backgrounds. We'd like to show you two students and their work. The first is by Laura Lombard.
I am Laura, and this is my slideshow about humpback whales. The humpback whale is a large whale that lives in all oceans. Humpback whales can grow to be 62 feet, 19 meters long. They have narrow heads and long, thin flippers. The skin is usually white on the whale's bottom and gray or black on its back and sides. Humpback whales have fins on their backs. These fins have ridges or humps, giving the large name. Source World Book. They also live in salt water. It is a mammal. What is a humpback whale? Humpback whale splashing out of the water. Humpback whale. Appearance. Humpback whales can grow to be 62 feet long. Humpback whales have fins on their backs. The humpback whale is a large whale. They weigh 20,000 pounds. They also have fin flippers. Their fins have humps on them. They have new heads. At the end is a humpback whale jumping out of the water. In the middle is a male humpback whale. Humpback whale photos. Baby humpback whale. Cute. Diet of the humpback whale. How they eat. The humpback whale eats quail and small fish. They swim with the mouth open and they have thin plates of bathing. They wind through the water. Then it forces the water within the food still inside its mouth. A bunch of them eat kink. Habitat and migration. The humpback whale lives in all oceans, warm or cold. They migrate from warmer waters to colder waters. They eat in cold waters and give birth to babies in warm waters. A humpback whale migrating. Mother humpback whale giving birth to a baby. Cute. Humpback whale diving underwater. Movement. The humpback whale travels in pods, a group of them swimming together. They are slow swimmers and dive several hundred feet and stay underwater for 20 to 25 minutes. Humpback whales swimming in a pod. Humpback whale jumping out of the water. Sometimes you can jump clearly out of the water. Interesting facts. Humpback whales communicate with bones or screams. The males repeat certain songs. These songs can be eerie or beautiful. Humpback whale beached. Humpback whale slapping the water.
Sperm whale by Elizabeth Goodridge. What are sperm whales? They live in the ocean. They are an ocean mammal. Appearance of a sperm whale. The sperm whale weighs up to 30,000 pounds. They are about 40 feet long. The colors are brownish black to dark gray. They have a really interesting large head. They are one of the largest toothed whales. Diet of a sperm whale. They are mostly killed by humans. They eat mainly squid, octopus, and deep water fish. It uses echolocation to find food. Pollution poisons their food. They have very large teeth. Habitat of sperm whale. The sperm whale lives in all oceans. It migrates to warmer water to mate and have calves. Females and calves live together in groups. Movement. Sperm whales are champion divers. They swim fast. They can dive up to 8,200 feet, which is 1.5 miles. They can hold their breath for more than an hour. Interesting facts. It has the largest head in the world. It is the largest of the toothed whales. It has this type of wax on its head called spermaceti, and they can dive the deepest.
During this project, the students learned a great deal about their specific whale. Their project addressed many of Alaska's standards, and they had a lot of fun. Thank you for letting us share this project with you tonight.
Well, thank you. Next, we'll move on to student representative report. Kinley Lister.
All right. PHS is nearing the end of quarter three and spring break. About half the students are at Regions right now because pep band, cheerleading, and basketball all went. A few weeks ago, there were homecoming games and a dance. Art students recently participated in an Ocean Connections competition, and a few students got awards for that. Baseball and track have started, and we are headed into spring.
Great. Yes, it felt very much like spring today. I hope it wasn't fake spring. Do we have any correspondence?
We have a letter that we've decided to read during the MAP presentation.
Oh, okay. Next, we have comments from the audience unrelated to agenda items. Okay. Please come on up to the microphone and state your name and who you represent.
You bet. How's that? My name is Jay Stanton Gregor, and I'm here representing myself. I want to speak directly to the board and let you know that you are valued by the majority of our community. I know this to a certainty because those of you who have been in contested elections have won in landslide fashion. This clearly tells me you reflect the will of most residents, even if I sometimes disagree with your decisions. As duly elected officials, I believe you are entitled to have your process and make your decisions in a way that is respectful of democratic principles. To me, that means that I hope when I'm done speaking here, nobody applauds my words or anyone else's tonight or otherwise, except for student presentations, as this isn't a sporting event, game show, or reality TV show. This body is a democratic institution. As a board, I believe you are expected to hear any and all feedback from we the public as long as it is given in a civil and respectful manner. Now, I was filled with empathy for all of you at the last school board meeting as I heard and saw behaviors that were not the least bit respectful of the democratic process. A theatrical and staged serving of papers to be recorded and uploaded to various websites is not dialogue, nor is it an honest dialogue. It does not show a respect to this body. Yelling and making accusations is not civil discourse. It strikes me as another theatrical display that does not serve our local democracy. My hope for tonight and for all other school board meetings that you guys have is that the community can express their support or concerns to you in a way that can honor the basic respect and dignity you deserve as humans and be consistent with our democratic principles. I thank you for the jobs you do. Even when I disagree with your decisions, I know you're all doing your best. And again, I know all of you are valued. Thanks.
Okay. Any other comments unrelated to the agenda? Okay. Next, we'll move on to comments from the audience.
I'm muted.
Sorry.
Oh.
Oh, we have one person that joined.
Okay, for unrelated or just they're just joining the meeting? Okay. Comments from the audience related to agenda items. We have a couple people that signed up. First one is Michelle Brock, and we'll adhere to the 3-minute time limit since we only have a couple people signed up, but people might change their mind.
Hello, school board members and Superintendent Clue Painter. I'd like to acknowledge all of your continuous diligence these past 2 years in your volunteer job. You've navigated tremendous challenges, balancing the wants and needs of so many, plus the endless hours spent researching and sifting through all of the medical science. Every one of you has students in the school district, and of course, you would not do anything that would hurt your own children or those of others. You have kind, compassionate hearts, which I know have been tormented by these decisions. You have all listened to passionate people on both sides of the issue of masking and those in the middle. I am thankful to those who have spoken on both sides in a kind and ethical manner. Even when we do not agree, there is no need for disrespectful behavior. It appears that individuals and groups of people cannot see your conscience hard at work, navigating the very real concerns on both extreme ends of this issue. You were and are in a no-win situation. If you had not put in a masking protocol or not followed through with it, we would have lost many concerned parents on the other end and students on the other end of the range to homeschooling. There are no easy solutions to what you guys have had to navigate. The last school board meeting, you came to a compromise. We are now at optional masking within the classroom. I'm struggling to see why this group of people cannot see this as a compromise, a middle ground, a move in their right direction. It seems as if it is all or nothing with them. I am appalled at the inappropriate behavior that took place at the last meeting. It is disheartening after all the time you have put in to be treated this way. You are amazing people who I have a lot of respect for, who have to make very difficult decisions. I applaud you for your hard work, and I'm here to tell you that there are many others in the district that feel the same way. Others who are not comfortable coming forward, that just want to quietly teach their classes without all this extra discomfort and anxiety and judgment from so many. So thank you for using your heads, your hearts, and your conscience as you worked your way through these impossible decisions. I want you to know that there are many of us that appreciate you and know that you are doing a remarkable job. Thank you.
Okay. Next is Donna Marsh.
say thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. I'm Donna Marsh. I represent myself. I proposed that the masking be entirely made optional for the students. I have heard anecdotal evidence that students given the option to mask or not mask are choosing to mask. Hooray, that's great. Why don't we open it up to everybody who can choose to do it or not? And it can be a family discussion, it can be an individual discussion, but that's what I would propose. As a parent of former students, as a grandparent whose grandchildren don't attend here, I am dismayed at the continual enforcement, and the follow the science mantra has been heavily emphasized, but the science is always changing. And the disaster that initially we thought would happen with COVID, gratefully, hasn't happened. But I think now it's time to completely make our mitigations optional. If someone isn't feeling well, stay home. If they get sick during school, send them home. I'll let the kids mask for themselves. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Anybody else like to speak? Okay. Seeing none. Anybody online? Okay. We'll move on to comments from board members. We'll move on to the consent agenda then. I'll make a motion to approve the monthly accounting reports, bills, payroll, electronic funds transfers, our trial balance and P-card statements, as well as our regular board meeting and our personnel report. So that's all in the consent agenda. So could I have a second?
I'll second.
Motion's been made and seconded by Katie. Mara, can you please call the roll?
Yes. Kinley Lister.
Yes.
Jay Lister.
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren.
Yes.
Meg Litster.
Yes.
Katie Holman?
Yes.
Carrie Case?
Yes. Okay. Motion passes 5-0. Next, we'll move on to administrative reports. Superintendent Clupea.
Okay. A couple things going on. I did include this right up in the board agenda, but I'll just go quickly through it. So we are gearing up for the legislative fly-in that's coming up in March, and Mr. Dormer and I both will be attending that this time together. That'll be fun. HB 272, if you're following any of these, this is some of the ones that I think Sarah was referencing during the last meeting, but they are continuing to move through the legislative process. So that's the one that does offer to have a two-year increase to the BSA, and it does seem to be getting some traction, so we're excited about that. HB 273 is the bill that's increasing the base student allocation by a percentage tied to the inflation indicator, consumer price index, and that also seems to be continuing to have some traction. So any feedback out there that people are interested in providing to any of our legislators, they appreciate it. It can be a short message, or I would encourage people to do that. Another process this week related to the READS Act, it's still moving through Senate Bill 111. Not really any significant changes to it at this point. Still basically focusing on the early childhood education component, K-3 screening, individual evidence-based interventions, and the parental notification and involvement. The state has also put out a pretty substantial process for people wanting to have access to information about the science of reading, and anybody can participate in these, and we will post this publicly. It doesn't just have to be teachers. It can be anybody who's interested in this, and they're putting a lot of time and effort into this, which is great. I think putting some resources very specifically to teachers, to parents, to administrators, to interested community members. So we'll be sharing that out publicly. We've shared it with our staff. I'm going to be doing it. I think we have a number of teachers who are doing it as well. And it starts March 22nd, and there's 6 of those sessions. So we will post that information out there for people who are interested, and also a link to the to the Alaska Reading Playbook, which is really a well-done document as well. So we're excited about that. Working with Aaron Buller on our roof repair process and working with our insurance adjuster, we do have 2 reasonable quotes from 2 different companies in Juneau. One of them was actually on site this week, took some core samples, and mostly what we're going to potentially be running into is supply chain issues. That's going to be our biggest challenge. And then one of the quotes was a little higher than our adjuster wanted it to be. So he's very involved in the process, and we keep communicating with him about what, you know, this is what it is. and it could be due to supplies and all those things, and he is working with us on that too and understands that. So I think we're working through that process pretty well so far. Lots of hiring going on. We talked about it a little bit today, Sarah and I did, on Campus Connection, and we are moving forward. I think we have one on tonight that's actually for your approval for a music position, so we're excited about that. Still working on high school counselor, our fabulous district sped director and testing coordinator who's retiring at the end of the year, Miss Bridget Whitstock, so we are trying to find a suitable replacement for you, which is, you know, big shoes, my friend. Looking at English language arts position after Miss Lenhart is transferring over to the elementary for the librarian and interventionist position. And what else? Did I get them all? I think that's all of them. So we're looking forward to that and moving through that process. We are also excited with our Healthy Living Grant and Wellness Committee. We are gearing up for our very first teen health fair on April 15th, and we're going to be doing it during the school day from between 9 and noon, working with local partners, and we're excited about that. And we are entering into negotiations with our classified union this spring. We have received notification from them, and probably in late March, early April, we'll be working through that process. So I think that is Sarah and Carrie. All right, so I think that's it.
Any questions? Okay, we'll move on. Principal's report. Miss Pond.
All right, that was a 3-page doozy you guys got there.
3 pages, Dormer.
Good. Yeah.
Lots going on.
I am going to spare you, though, and I will not read through everything. I think Mara, you revised. It was so long that Mara revised mine for me. So we will just focus on a few bits of information. When you look at the attendance report, I want you to know I had to go back to a pre-COVID year, and so that is in comparison with this COVID year. Mm-hmm. So the attendance you'll see on top is the 2017-2018 mm-hmm. data, and then 2021 and 22 data is right under there.
Wow.
So you can see the amount for every month, how many students were absent per day for every month. In 17-18
November
and 21-22.
November's off the charts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was our big outbreak.
That was about 50 students per day absent.
Wow. So what happened in December 17-18?
A lot of
traveling.
It's
I
travel.
Guess.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
That's
travel.
A lot of absences, over
yes.
500. I guess I didn't look at this very carefully, I'll admit, sorry.
So, thanks, Mara. She said, you better explain it, Heather. So then you would go down, and the winter MAP testing data is just where we are mm-hmm. with scores below proficient. I wouldn't really focus on those scores too much, as opposed to the winter of 21 to the winter of 22, the MAP growth, because there is a lot of growth that's seen in there. So you'll notice that for kindergarten to first grade, there is no data for math, and be considerate of that data for reading, because they are just learning how to control an iPad. They're just learning how to navigate, and everybody's in the classroom and they're all going, I'm ready, or what is it? Yeah.
Help me.
Yeah, yeah, with the little worm. They just like the worm. So, there is the MAP data that you had asked for, but I also accompanied it with the attendance because I felt that was a very important piece mm-hmm. to where we are and what we're doing. And then I guess I'll just say thank you. We have special acknowledgments, and I just want to say thank you to them. Katie Eddy, Nicole Olson, and Susan Erickson, I had reached out. Fourth grade in Wrangell is not doing a Stikine River trip at this time. And so we really wanted to to make this work, and they knew the right people in the right places, and it was within hours that I had received after being the boats we have used in the past were going to bring, they're having cruise ships come into Wrangell, and so those boats, and so we arranged it so that we could work it in for our both of our fourth and fifth grade to go up the Stikine River this year. Oh, so that's neat. 72 kids. And so that's in the works and happening. So just a big shout out to them. And then we've had Lachlan come to us with a chess club idea. And so Lachlan and then Silas, and it has grown. It has grown from 2 students to 12 students. And then I put it in our bulletin, and we've had adults coming in to play. And one just left the other day and was like, wow, that was a really hard game. You know, that was just a really hard game. So, yeah, Craig Olson, he keeps coming back for more. So Craig and Rick, Jeb Morrow, and Stacy Eilenberger is our high school student who's coming over to volunteer to help navigate the chess club. So just special acknowledgement there. And then our AR goals drawing is sponsored by the Grand Lodge of Alaska. So they sponsor students who meet their AR goals, get put into a bucket, and then a drawing for a boy and a girl comes out of it. They give a bike, a helmet, and a lock right now in the total worth of $185. And Aubriana Wright and Thomas McCowan won this month for this trimester. So thank you to them. Lots of good special acknowledgments. And I think I will sum that up right there. Do you have any questions?
Oh, boy. I think it's important to acknowledge how much absentee, whether we as, you know, that the staff doesn't have any control of that. Some kids are, you know, we have been dealing with COVID, so kids have been sick when normally they wouldn't have been out of school that long. But also just acknowledging that there's a lot of absences. Mm-hmm. And there's only so much the district can do for kids if they're not in school.
Yeah.
So, but it's interesting to see this data, good, bad, or indifferent, you know. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any questions or comments?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Next, we will have middle school, high school report, Mr. Dormer.
Hello. Good evening. I'm going to start putting a lot of spaces in mine and using really big font, you know, just to kind of, you know, students have to get that paper.
Maybe 14 font? Indent?
Yeah, right. Font. Right, if I change the margins, anything. Yeah. Wow. Anyway, good evening. Trying to keep it relatively short. There's a gazillion. Kim did a great job. There's a lot of stuff going on, as we know, and the weather and lots of cool things for kids, talking regionals. But first, just a neat thing I was able to be part of, and thanking my staff for covering for me. I was able to attend, go to Washington, D.C. to advocate for education funding, which is really cool. I haven't done that before. That was a neat training for me, but just a really cool opportunity. This was state-sponsored, not school district-sponsored. And I went down with some other principals, too. And we met with Senator Sullivan, Senator Murkowski, Congressman Young, and was able to meet the Secretary of Education, the head of my organization of secondary school principals, as a Hawaiian gentleman, and just really gracious. So I met some neat people, and of course, I was the only Southeast rep, and so of course I got to say, please keep that money coming for the infrastructure bill for the ferries. It's really important to us, and it was Murkowski and Sullivan, both were very receptive. We understand. Murkowski uses the words connecting the dots of those communities. And I said, please keep it up, and talked about our kids that went on the ferry this year for the first time since 2019, according to Mr. Cabral, back to regionals and the fun there. So it's a neat trip. It's obviously less expensive. There's lots of benefits. So it's exciting to, just that they were all very gracious listeners to us, and that's really all we can hope for. I'm sure they, you know, they have their own agendas and what they're doing. And then one of the very big highlights, I have to say, I did not know Bob and Becky were going to be here, but we got to meet with Helen Martin. If you didn't know, she is a, I don't even know her title. Say her title since you're here.
Correspondence,
yeah, for Senator Sullivan, and it's really neat because she just got there in January and as a kind of a volunteer, and then she got a job and she's already been promoted, and so they really love her there. I told my staff there, I haven't said this out loud, but when I got there, we have to wait for Senator Sullivan, who's a very busy man, and so I was waiting there, and Helen kind of came through this door, and there was a door behind us here, and so I said, hey, doing good, you know, and there's a lot of the other people in there working, and this gentleman came through that was maybe 40, popped through and said, Helen, and she showed him a paper, and Helen goes, yep, uh-huh, no, okay, yep, 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 and hands it back to him, he leaves. And I was like, oh, she's a PHS grad. She just showed him, and he was like easily twice her age. I was so proud of her, and she's doing really well. It was really cool. So I knew you'd want to hear about our PHS grads and the great things that they do, because they go out there and just conquer the world. So it was really cool. And again, nice trip to fight for schools all over the place. So neat. Busy times here, and Kinley, you're welcome to throw in here too. Homecoming was awesome, right? I mean, we had a pep assembly, which we haven't had in quite a while, and that was, Mr. Garmadro said, that was really probably, I mean, honestly, the most interactive and exciting pep assembly I've had in my 13 years. Did you have fun?
Yeah, it's pretty good one.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good one. And what's funny is the bell rang, and Mr. Garmadro had to finally say, like, you gotta go. Like, people were just having fun there, and they didn't leave, because a lot of times, no offenses, high school kids, when the bell rings, like, the door, it happens really quick, you know, and they really had fun, and that was, you know, our ASB, and, you know, was involved in that, and kids making decisions, and playing games, and I believe, actually, Whitelister was the fastest on a scooter board. I don't know if you've ever done that at the house, but he's fast.
I heard.
Did you hear? Because he was behind, and he had to catch up, which was
super
cool.
We're very proud of him. Education.
He does love to.
A scooter board.
That's your ticket now, man.
Yeah,
we're looking for a scholarship.
There might be out there.
Yeah.
So Pep Assembly is great, and I played some, we had, obviously, great basketball games. We had to recognize our seniors, and all those things. So a lot of really good things. Community was there. Of course, we had a dance, and that was fun too. Were you able to go to the dance? Was that fun? Yeah.
That went well.
Good. Yeah, I thought so too. And again, a lot of kids wondered where it was there. And as Stacey Ellenberger mentioned, was there. And we stayed up till it was like 12:45 when we finally put stuff away, the students. But kids have fun. So it's really cool as we get out of this mess we've been in, that kids are getting to be kids more and more and do stuff and connect and just smile and dance. And I love it. I see this a lot in, especially Petersburg and our hardworking fishing community, but I love when the kids dress up. It's just really good for them. I know I do it all the time at work, but they look good. They look great. It's pretty cool. And many, many hands. And Mr. Grobs, he leads a great program, but many people worked hard for the great homecoming weekend. So we're thankful for that. And they are off to regionals now, which is going really well. And just to have the kids doing those fun things. I mean, part of it, connecting and doing stuff that they haven't been part of in years. So that's pretty neat. It's been 2 years. And just the Mr. Grob remembering, this is when kind of all the craziness started. We were there when this finally kicked up, when the kind of COVID craziness, and I was trying to get home, and there were, you know, there's no toilet paper around, and all that stuff was regionals 2 years ago, so it's a little
lifting
feeling of going back to it, but it's going great so far. I haven't heard anything about toilet paper shortages or anything, so. And as Ken said, we're headed out, end of quarter three is March 25th, so we're almost three quarters of the way through the school year, believe it or not, and so that's exciting. As the superintendent said, we're headed up to the legislative fight at the end of the month. That'll be fun. I've actually never gone, and now they have a little bit of training, and I'm on the board there, so I'm going to go, and we're going to go fight for school some more, you know?
That's right.
Keep doing it, so that'll be fun. And then parents will be getting a letter here soon. Our state testing is coming up here in early April, and that's especially, it's, you know, it goes 3 through 9 for the actual kind of the Alaska Star that Ms. Whitsock's going to talk more about. But we also have the ACT for all our juniors, and we do the pre-ACT for all of our sophomores. That's school paid, which again, one of those cool things I say every year and we hear, but I love that that we're able to provide so all kids can take one of those high-level college career readiness exams. And it may be something a lot of kids wouldn't have chosen to do for themselves and realize, hey, I can do this. I hope it opens more doors, at least in their mind, because we know we have great, smart kids, but a lot of times they don't go out of their way to do these challenging things, or they don't believe in themselves, and sometimes a good result on one of those scores may open some doors in their mind. So I love we do that. Ms. Turner and Ms. Whitstock really help with that. So busy times, but the kids are doing well. Any questions for me? Okay, thanks.
Thank you. All right. Director of Activities, we know what we heard. Mr. Cabral is in Ketchikan, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that kids will be going to state if they qualify the following week of spring break.
Mm-hmm.
Any other highlights anybody wanted to bring up? I guess maybe there was a few things bold on his report that it looks like indoor events will be continuing to test for athletes and activities, at least for the rest of the calendar year.
That's the update from
Jamie, from Region 5.
From Region 5.
Yeah. Just kids that are in activities. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he sent another email this afternoon about that is for indoor events, and that there is also talk amongst districts some districts are letting go of testing completely, some districts are keeping it. I think there's a lot of, there's an argument to be made, I think, with the travel that happens here with planes and ferries and such that is different than maybe up north where you might get in a car or a bus. It's, you know, so I think that there will still be a lot of districts and communities in Southeast that
stick with it,
retain it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Does anybody else have any questions or comments?
Close-ups this month too, so they're...
It is.
Yeah.
So we had not.
And it's headed out the week after.
May 26th.
Saturday, March.
Or 25th. Or they leave on that Friday.
They may leave on Friday. You're right. I don't remember if it's Friday.
Yeah.
We leave Friday. March
Friday.
25th. April 2nd.
Yeah. It's coming. And they're testing that week before they go to. Yeah.
Well, that'll be exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. And how many kids are going?
14.
Oh, that's a decent group.
Do they usually give a little 14 presentation?
14 and John and
I was just going to say
that.
Oh.
What's that? Do they give a little presentation when they come back? Would they want to?
Could we ask them?
Can we ask?
April,
we need to travel vicariously through these kids right now.
That would be great timing, though, Heather.
Oh,
if you
that
guys
would be kind of fun if a couple
because,
kids didn't.
Yeah, it'd be if they did it in April, you guys, if the meeting's not that long after you guys get back.
It doesn't have to be anything fancy.
No, just some
if
pictures.
A couple kids want to come.
Pictures, chat it up.
Seventh grade is planning on, Mrs. Briner is planning on doing mammals.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, but we could do 10th too.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway,
it'll
be fun. We'll do something creative
as a camera and video. There's no shortage of pictures,
that's for sure. That's true.
They can do it right on the airplane on their little
can. iMovie it.
Mm-hmm. Work on it on the 6-hour flight back.
Yeah.
That's right.
They're going to love us.
Somewhere in there.
They're going to love us for that.
Okay, we'll move on to committee reports. Crisis?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Curriculum, Katie?
Yes, I do have some notes. We met on Friday. The curriculum committee is going through the process of redoing their curriculum and getting ready to purchase some new things and adapting to the new generation science standards, which is going to be a big shift. So we are going to have a work session in April before our board meeting on April 8th.
Mm-hmm.
And then at our April board meeting, we'll get to formally vote on it. Very exciting things happening. The committee did say that they plan to email out the curriculum and all of the materials to us so we can look at it about a week in advance. And if you have any questions or comments or anything, you can email any of them before the board meeting or work session if you need clarification before then. But it looks awesome. They're doing great work. And that switched to the new generation science standards. Just a reminder for parents, the tests already reflect that change, but our kids haven't necessarily gotten the curriculum that does meet those standards because it was a big change. It was a much needed change to a science curriculum. And so don't have super test shock if your child doesn't test super great in science. Right off the bat.
On standardized tests, you mean?
Yes.
Like the...
Yes, the state ones.
Mm-hmm.
Because we just, we need our to give our teachers time to do their awesome teaching thing and catch up with how they have changed this and restructured the science classes in the secondary school. So just keep that in mind. And then another note, not necessarily about science, but just to highlight the reading playbook. Super awesome document. It's really accessible for parents.
Mm-hmm.
They really do break it down by age groups. Really quick and easy things you can do with your families at home or on your quick car ride to school in the morning. It's really easy. I recommend everybody take a look at it. Even if you just read your age group for your kiddos, I'm already using some of the tips at the preschool and the kids are loving it. We've made a game out of some of the ideas. And so I recommend it. Take the time to download it and read it because it's a good one.
That's on the main Department of Education.
Yes, indeed.
Alaska website. You pull it up.
It's
you
there.
You can see the Alaska
reading
playbook.
Right
there.
Yeah. It's really well done.
And it is a good. And it's easy. It's just easy to get that information out of it. It's not written for necessarily for higher level teachers or I don't know who else, but it will benefit them too. But it is accessible to families and something that they can put into use. So that's all I have for curriculum right now. Look forward to the science next month and see in their formal presentation.
Nice. Okay, thank you. Facilities, Jay?
Nothing right now.
Okay. Negotiations, which it sounds like we'll hopefully, I know that there were some scheduling conflicts. It sounds like we'll be going end of this month possibly.
Yeah.
And policy, Carrie and Meg.
We have been meeting and making progress, and I think some of that is reflected on what we'll look at this evening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And technology? Okay. And wellness?
Nothing.
Okay. Great. All right. We'll move on to old business, 14.1. The superintendent will recommend considering the February 25th CDC guidance in combination with low local COVID case counts, local COVID hospitalization rates, and the vaccine pass positive rates to make masking optional starting after spring break. All other mitigation, testing, and notification of positive cases will stay the same. The district reserves the right to implement short-term masking if the medical facility is experiencing high levels of new COVID patient admissions, or if there's an outbreak large enough to consider moving to remote learning. The decision to implement short-term masking would be made under guidance and recommendation from the health advisory team. Could I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded, and so now we have a discussion. I don't know how much I want to go over.
Just let me know.
Highlights for those that maybe are listening.
Give any more information. So I know, I guess we recapped this a little bit, and feel free anybody to jump in, but we recapped this a little bit today at Campus Connection, but just to kind of highlight how we've been trying to proceed through all of this is, you know, taking the CDC guidance into account, taking the Department of Health and Social Services recommendations into account, working with our local health advisory team to make decisions that we think ultimately are reasonable and you know, the best that we can do with the information that we have in our community. So with that said, we've made, you know, some adjustments and changes as since Christmas, basically. I mean, January, we made some changes to contact tracing because of the changes that were happening with public health and those recommendations. And so we kind of peeled back some of those responsibilities, I guess, for lack of a better word, and especially with the transmissibility of Omicron and how that was looking, and that it no longer became manageable to, you know, keep track of all that. So that was a change that public health made. So we made the same adjustment, and everybody voted for that and approved that. At that time, we did go ahead and maintain masking at that point, and then moved into February. And all along, everybody has said, you know, we want to look at the local information, we want to look at the state information and the trends, and then taking into account what the medical guidance is. And so then the changes that came, the adjustments that were made to the levels from Meg's recommendation, and that has gone fairly well. I mean, I would say that it's been implemented fairly well. The people have responded well to it. We had to move back to universal masking in the middle school and high school with the threshold numbers that were put in place. Kids seem to be fine with that, and also had some opportunities, again, as today is Tuesday, I guess yesterday, to go back to the kind of yellow level in the classrooms. And so I think all of that metric worked fine. Elementary, same thing. If there was a case, then it went to the 10 days of masking in that classroom, but not building wide, and that seemed to be manageable as well. So then February 25th, after the last meeting and before this one, then the CDC did put out some updated guidance around this and provided some information for schools and communities in general. And they were looking at things beyond just case counts and looking at severity of illness and hospitalizations and taking all of that into account within a local community, and as well as, you know, vaccination rates and positive or past positives and how that might weigh in. So all of those things being taken into account, right now Petersburg is still listed in this sort of high category. If you look at the maps on that doc, it's still listed as high. So when we talked with the health advisory team about that, and how does that work, you know, I mean, it's like that here, why is Wrangell not, or why is Haynes not, or, you know, I mean, just kind of trying to understand that. And it basically can be due, I mean, one or two cases in a community our size will kick you into a sort of a different realm and looking at if you do have sort of a localized outbreak like Mountain View Manor or some other sort of thing, it's going to kick you there quicker. So far, people who have been out with illness or if people are testing positive, you know, we've implemented the change to the, yeah, Sarah does have a cold.
I have a cold.
A cold?
I'm tested again.
That she's tested multiple times. Because that's what we all
it's
do now.
Old now.
A lot of us do that, right? And so I will say that those are things that we have seen that have happened as we did implement test to stay and all of those pieces. We've seen a lot of that happening, and people are doing that at home, or they're doing that with their kids, or if their kids are not feeling well. For the most part, people are keeping them home, or they're letting us know, yep, they're positive, and I'm going to keep their brother home with them too, or whatever, you know. So people, I think, are willing to do that and do seem to appreciate having access to home antigen kits. I think that's been helpful for people and somewhat kind of calming to some. So having all those things available has been important. Having access to vaccination has been important, and having time for people to feel comfortable, especially with younger kids, considering vaccination. It seems to be fairly successful with our kids and staff members that have been vaccinated. We are seeing that, and that's what the health advisory team said as well. You know, looking at that as a factor, looking at the availability of testing, looking at the opportunity that we're starting to move into spring and get outdoors a little bit more. We've also, you know, recently purchased the air purifiers for each classroom. I think those are in every office now, practically when you go anywhere. They're just everywhere, and so that just might be something that we have, and maybe it'll suck lots of germs out of the air, which is great. You know, we don't want colds either. So so I feel like we're in a place, I mean, it's always hard for me. I tend to be a little more conservative on this issue. Everybody knows that. So, but I think we're to a place where it's time to probably take that next, you know, step, and we've kind of taken these steps along the way. So my recommendation would be that we look at optional masking when we return from spring vacation, and see how that goes, and know that we have the option if we need to pull back, we can always do that. I think that's where we are. That's what I would recommend, I guess, at this time. Leaving other mitigations in place. Sorry if I didn't say that. I feel like I said that earlier, but
yeah. Any other questions or comments?
I have questions.
Okay.
Is the plan for the health advisory team to continue meeting weekly or to touch base weekly?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to loop back to that.
Okay.
What's the rationale for waiting until after spring break versus doing it today?
My advice for that would just be because even though we know a lot of people are ready to be done with masks, there are a lot of people who aren't yet. And so I feel like it would be nice to just give them a couple more days to kind of acclimate to that. And it's two more days. I guess that's all I'm thinking, is that we do have some people who are not excited about this idea, or concerned about it, I guess, maybe have a higher concern. So that's my reason for that.
Okay. I'm a little worried that it opens up the door for additional changes to happen, and the train to switch rails again between now and after spring break.
Which train? Like the masking train?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like CDC guidance?
No, or just what we're doing here, what we're comfortable with. Mm-hmm. It being left to the discretion of the health advisory team, which isn't going to necessarily meet all the time, which is fine. I'm trying to understand, like, mm-hmm. when do they decide to meet? How is the process of all of a sudden we're masking again? And I don't necessarily want to. You know, metrics made sense last month. They mm-hmm. don't necessarily make sense with this new guidance. So I'm not proposing mm-hmm. that we get ourselves stuck in a situation that mm-hmm. that's like the opposite of what I want. I've been pretty clear that I'm ready to be done masking or for the school to be done.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little bit hesitant with waiting, and I'm a little bit hesitant with that being our the deciding body or the decision maker, you know. I guess my preference would be to see us do this immediately, or as well as for it to be maybe more of a maybe even a board decision if we were to return to masking. So that's my two cents.
I agree with Meg a little bit. I think it needs to be more of a transparent process on how we go from universal to optional masking. Because right now, even with the CDCs, I can't quite figure out how in the heck they're white red, why the city's yellow, why, with so few cases and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it should be more of a transparent process, you know, and public, so possibly have the board make those decisions when we switch from one to the other,
mm-hmm.
rather than in a meeting that we don't really know how in the heck they come to that decision. And that gives the public, that all feel so strongly about it, a chance to come hear why were the decision and put their input in.
So this new policy would replace the metrics that we have in place right now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, I support the idea of, yes, it should come through the board to change it. I am in favor of waiting until after spring break, because we've also kind of already set that precedent last month.
Mm-hmm.
When we changed the policy, we gave teachers time to make accommodations in their classroom. If there's optional masking at some of our secondary classes, they might want to change their seating chart or reorganize their tables or whatever
mm-hmm.
to allow kids more space
right.
than they have, because they have been masking there for quite a bit of the time. So
mm-hmm.
I am in favor of waiting until after spring break for it to go into effect, because
mm-hmm.
it would be like we did last month. So.
And just to say on the condition right now, the classrooms are pretty empty because of regions, so at least for high school, like, there's very, very few people. And it's kind of interesting, but I'd say about 80-90% of students are still choosing to mask, so.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, thanks.
My preference is purely selfish, to wait till after spring break, and I'm sure that there are other people that are traveling over spring break, but it would be a real bummer if one of my kids caught it in the next couple of days. They probably won't, but there might be families that haven't vaccinated and for one reason or another, and you know, still want some protection at school where their kid's going. And so those are kind of the selfish aspects of it that I think, what's two more days really, especially if they know they can probably get to the airplane on Friday without having been exposed at school at least. And then, you know, they are traveling, then their exposure is different. But I can tell you, you know, my recent travels to Seattle were remarkably different than our own little town. You know, my risk level was like very low down there. So, you know, I just, for selfish reasons, I would prefer, not only for our household, but I'm sure there are others that might, that have been cautious and are worried about removing the masks, you know, whether they've got plans or not for during spring break.
My preference, because I agree with Katie, we have set precedents prior to give the staff some notice when we change things. And I think that is reasonable to stay consistent on either side of the issue. We are heading into vacation, and so my preference would be to institute this after spring break. But I do agree about the process of change, that we need to talk about that a little bit more, and if it comes through the board. My only concern with that is how implementable, how often is that gonna, you know, we just have to kind of think through, is this going to be like we're meeting every week, or are we meeting, you know, what are we setting ourselves up for? Because we do want it to be a transparent process, but we also don't want to get into a loop of like, we're meeting every 3 days and we're trying to make all these different decisions, you know. I don't have an answer for it, but that's the first thing that comes to my mind. What is the best way to be consistent about addressing things like that?
The quickest you can have a meeting is 24 hours, which is it's a pretty quick turnaround. I mean, it says as soon as possible, notification, but so in theory you could have less than 24 hours, but I think it's pretty reasonable that would be the minimum, to notify the public that we may be making a big change.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the biggest, like we've talked about it, and like, you know, what it says is, you know, at the risk of going virtual, that's our risk. And so then are we quickly meeting virtually to prevent a virtual school? Maybe that's the answer.
And could we just set, like, I'm looking at our February plan and the red universal masking, but maybe we could set metrics similar to that, maybe not like this tight, but, you know, if there's so many classes at the elementary school where we're seeing positives pop up, maybe we need to have a meeting kind of thing to talk about masking again, or if there's so many students at the secondary level. So something similar to what Meg had drafted last month. And then another concern I have also is the way Meg had written it last month for our elementary students was, if you test a positive, you come back on day 6 and your whole class is masked. So it's not putting all of that stigma on just that one student. So that's still a real concern of mine. And sending that child back and they're potentially the only one having to wear the mask, because it's not even kids necessarily being mean. I know I've said it before, but it's just the questions is a lot for kids to deal with. And, you know, especially our younger ones, first or second grade, that's a lot. Like, why are you wearing your mask still? You know, you can take it off. And it's like, but they shouldn't, you know, because they're still COVID positive. So that's a concern of mine. Yeah, just to put that out there.
I think as a society and as kids, we need to be okay with saying, I choose to wear a mask or I choose not to, whether it's for whatever reasons.
Like, you know, you have a cold. you just don't want to spread your cold.
So, I mean, I hate to see if there's some bullying, but I think we need to be comfortable with saying, I choose to or I don't choose to. Let's
have those conversations.
And have those conversations. It's not okay to bully people either.
Yeah. Well, and it's not always just bullying, though. It's legitimate question. Like, are you okay? Like, that's what we saw when we tried it a couple of days at Kinderscout. Like I said, it was a disaster. But we tried it. But yeah, it did not go well. And it was just genuine concern, but it was from a whole class of kids. Are you feeling okay? Why are you wearing your mask? Should you go home? Do I need to wear my mask? And all of these things. And it just put so much pressure on these. I mean, they were younger kids on the younger end. But they didn't know how to answer the questions. Or they don't want to say, well, yeah, COVID, you know, because they shouldn't have to disclose that if they don't want to.
I just wanted to report, as we've moved into the optional, which has gone great, we have witnessed some bullying in the middle school, specifically with kids that have chosen to wear a mask and kids walking by. It's stupid. What are you doing with that on? Why would you keep wearing it? You know, that kind of stuff. And, of course, our teacher's right there and conversations and, you know, no one's punching each other or anything. But it's weird. You know, it's different. It's similar to the kid that shows up one day with blue hair. What's going on? What's wrong with you kind of thing? Like, well, now you're doing that. And as you said, you just need to accept that some people color their hair blue when he says blue hair. Some people are going to choose to wear a mask. Some people are going to wear a face shield. And so, obviously, we're educators, and so we teach kids. And overall, kids, you know, they care about each other. We're going to get through this, but it happened very quickly and maybe a little more than we expected in the middle school. I haven't heard reports or seen much of it in the high school. They're a little more subtle, though, you know, either way. So just thought that was good information.
I had someone ask me in the grocery store why I still wear one a while back when it was mandated. Well, because it's mandated. That would be at that point in time why I was wearing one. But we can all do what we want. That was a grown-up. I agree with you about giving teachers time. That seems reasonable to me. I wasn't thinking about it that way, and I'm capable of having an open mind. So I acquiesce on that point. I would still like to see a board meeting if we're going to move back to masking. I guess in my personal opinion is at this point, at this juncture, based on what the CDC is saying, based on the experiences that we have had locally and nationwide, it is time to move forward. There's some risk involved in that we've inched our way to this point. We might have another outbreak. That might be what happens. And I'm not sure that even then masking is the solution at that point in time. I feel like, you know, I remember a couple years ago, it was some other kind of virus, and there was an astronomical number of kids out. Another year with hand, foot, and mouth disease. Like, this is part of working with kids. So I believe that that's where we're at, and I would like to think that even with an outbreak, we wouldn't necessarily be moving back to masking. So I don't support additional metrics, but it will be interesting to see, because if we have a meeting every other week, I guess that would be the time that we would need to talk about metrics for that at that point. It's kind of nerve-wracking since we just got to that point, and then it's sort of like abandoning it, which didn't feel like it worked that well before. So anyway.
Yeah, I agree with you that we could see how it goes. I mean, you know, this is all new territory, and I think we've been trying to react to situations as they come up or try to think ahead about them, and that could, you know, public health is public health, you're right, and we deal with lots of different things, and so.
Is it like three weeks that we have between spring break and our next meeting? 2 weeks. What is it? Where's my calendar?
I guess it would have to be almost catastrophic.
Yeah, I guess that's
numbers
right.
To shut the school down.
Yeah, and maybe that's what the metric really is, that metric, which is it's large enough to consider moving to remote learning. That's the metric. I mean, if we're going to not have enough people to be...
Open the doors.
I guess that would be, to me, the most extreme
level
of that, I guess.
And at that point, maybe you are having a board meeting anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just seeing numbers on my calendar here. None of them make any sense to me. So spring break is
like three weeks and 2 days until our next board meeting after we start after spring break. And hopefully we wouldn't have to meet before that then, I guess.
So at this point, would we need to motion to amend this for the?
Well, Sarah actually moved the description of the item.
Oh, what did I do? Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
To update, so I guess it's mostly just make a motion to update.
You could vote on Sarah's motion. She could rescind her motion.
I'll rescind my motion.
Could
I have a second?
Separate motion.
Can you, do you vote to rescind? I don't even know. It's been so long since I ever did one.
I'm confused. Did you type in a change?
The only thing, I read the description.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because it was the decision to implement short-term masking would be made under the guides. Mostly that we're moving to, that is kind of our motion anyway.
Can we just make a friendly amendment to it? Or did you rescind already? Did we vote?
Well, we don't have language to actually vote on, so.
There is a recommended motion in your,
how did I miss
your guys'
that?
Board books.
Well, you might not have your recommended motions tab checked up at the very top.
Oh, that's my problem.
There it is.
Oh,
and that is just a very generic one.
Mine is, I'm with you, so that's why I was so confused.
Where are you at?
Recommended motions. Here you go.
What? Why do I not have that screen?
See, sorry, folks.
I'm president now.
You're president.
You take over.
You and I are logged in the same way.
I know. I don't see that at all.
Do you want me to make a motion, or can you read it?
Yes, I can read that.
Okay. Is it big? You got it.
I will make a motion to make masking optional in the buildings district-wide based on low levels of new COVID patient admissions to PMC and all other mitigation measures stay in place.
Do you want to add a date?
Effective March...
21st?
March 21st, 2020.
Two.
Thank you.
We are not going back to 2020.
No. I do
just
not want
to. Just let y'all know that's not happening. Okay. All right. No.
Okay, so now is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded by Katie. Whew, sorry, folks. I'm on Dayquil. Just admit that. I'm a little. And I need to figure out how to get that screen.
If you scroll all the way up, you can click on the box.
Where?
Right there. Recommended motions.
Sorry, I'm not being a little overly dramatic. Frustrated that I did not notice that. Okay. Okay, motion's been made and seconded. Any further discussion?
So, I mean, at this point, this motion would make it so that that is the rule of the day until you change that, which we have up there.
Yep. So we need to change the, sounds like most everybody wants the change that we would meet instead of having.
I don't even know if that's on this document, though.
It's not.
Okay.
No. We could add that we're going to meet to decide changes.
Well, would it, is it just implied? Because if there's
Until you change it, this goes forward,
and the only way to change that is by having another board meeting, so it doesn't technically need to be explicitly stated. Okay. Any further discussion? Mara, why don't you call the roll on this one?
Okay. Kinley Lister.
Yes.
Meg Litzer.
Yes.
Katie Holmland.
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren.
Yes.
Carrie Case.
Yes.
Jay Lister.
Yes.
Okay, motion passes 5-0. Thanks for helping out, everybody. My brain's a little... Ugh. Okay, moving on to new business. We have contracts for our non-tenured teachers for the 2022-23 school year. I'll make a motion to approve the non-tenured contracts as listed. I'll second.
I'll second.
Motion's been made and seconded by Meg. Any discussion?
That's a good lineup of teachers.
Yeah, like glad it. To have, I think everybody's coming back. So, motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion passes 5-0. Next, we move on to 15.2, which is informational about our MAP and AK Star testing update. So, our district coordinator, Bridget Woodstock, will provide an update to our district MAP testing as well as information about the upcoming Star State Summit of Testing. Excuse myself for just a moment to put on my bags.
Can you see your...
I do not have Bridget's thing. You got it?
I do. Do you want me to put it up or do you want to put it up? Do you have your notes, though, still? Look at you.
John, help. And Becky's going to drive.
Oh, great.
And she's also going to...
Team players.
Yeah.
We work together. Love it.
I like team sports.
Screen is very close to us.
Okay, thank you guys for being here tonight again. And I wanted to respond to Jay's request to sort of see a kind of like a map, a year comparison with our students. So that's what I'm going to try to present tonight. And Heather did an amazing job of showing you kind of how the absences within the last, year or so have really affected our assessments. But there are other things as well. So anyway, we're going to go ahead and go on to the next slide. So the first slide, or the second slide. Okay, so here's a chart that I've shared with you before, and this is for MAP, and it's showing some growth comparisons from winter of 21 to winter of 22. So if you take a look at the column achievement percentile, you've got that third grade row where that shows number of growth events was 23, so that was basically 23 students that tested in. It's the same set of students. So for third grade this year, winter of 22, they were second graders in winter of 21. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So, okay, good. So it shows on that achievement percentile that they grew from 23%, from the 23rd percentile to the 29th percentile. So that shows an average growth with that group from second to third grade. So that is what it shows. Okay, and then the fourth grade went from the 13th percentile to the 16th percentile, and the fifth grade went from the 65th percentile to the 64th percentile. So when you look at that data, it's interesting to study that. And there's an important note that we wanted to bring to your attention, in that the normative data that these tests are based on was taken in July of 2020. And it was based on school years 2015 and 16, 2016 and 17, and 2017 and 18. So all the data for achievement and whatnot was based on those 3 years 5 years ago. Okay, so when times were peaceful, can I say, kids were in school learning, right? I mean, there was the normal stuff going on, but we weren't in the middle of a pandemic. So these scores, when you look at like the 23rd percentile to the 29th, you're kind of like, ooh, 23rd percentile, that doesn't seem like the 50th percentile is dead average. And so, you know, you hope to be like about the 50th percentile, then you'd be like in the average range. But yes.
Is that average for the state?
This is not state. This is United States.
United States, okay.
Yeah, U.S. data. So does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I just want to say, as you say 23%, is that for 20% of fourth graders or whatever?
Yes, of that age group.
Of the age
yes.
group, okay.
Of those third graders, yep.
So 23% of the third graders are 50%?
Well, the average of all of our third graders are at the 23rd percentile.
Oh, 23rd.
So that's kind of in the lower end. But again, we're comparing this group to a set of data that is 5 years old, when I believe achievement was quite a bit higher than what we're dealing with right now. We're coming out of a pandemic. Mm-hmm. So we're coming out of times when we're, you know, despite all of this. So I guess what I want to highlight, and Becky, I want you to chime in here, because she's
you're
in the trench.
Well, So 50 would be where we want the average, for example, third grade, is where we would see nationally a third grader performing before all these absences, illnesses, and all the other things that have happened. If a child were to make the standard growth that the pre-pandemic child would make, their percentile would not change the following year. In order for that achievement percentile to go up, they have to be above the 50 in order for that growth to happen. So if a child just makes typical growth in a year, pre-pandemic growth in a year, they're going to stay at the 23rd. So any improvements that you see show that their growth is greater in that time frame than a child in a pre-pandemic year. So I was thrilled to see growth, because I expected mm-hmm. us to see a slowing down, that growth would be diminished because of all the absences and so forth.
And so winter 21, so that's a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's coming, I guess it's a few months into the school year after
going home.
A third grader, that previous year would have been a second grader, which would mean for 3 months they were home, presumably.
In first grade too, yeah.
With mm-hmm. very little, I mean, I personally have a fourth grader now, so I know that year, you know, I think we're somewhat functioning family, and not a lot happened.
Yep.
Sorry, it was really hard to do
yep.
anything. So it is interesting. I would expect them to be low, but it's good to see that they're
growing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like Becky said, it's not just 6 percentage. I mean, it's bigger than that. It's.
And while we can't make up for those lost days, what we can do is pick up the pace. And to me, seeing growth shows, hey, in the few days that we've had them with all these absences and everything else, we've been able to pack a lot in. And I think the smaller class sizes,
yes.
I think the funding, the math and reading specialists, I think all those things are helping.
Yeah,
does
absolutely.
It compare our own student? Because I'm thinking the class that would have been in third grade 5 years ago are eighth graders now, which is a high performing, high academic class.
Yep, we can get there.
Okay, sorry.
No, I mean, I'm excited to share. Yeah.
Okay.
Good. Good questions. And these are our kids, so we know our mm-hmm. you know. So, sure. Yep. So this is just another way to look at this data for these third, fourth, and fifth graders in math. And the blue is their observed growth, and the little carrot or the diamond is the recommended or the grade level norms projected growth from MAP. And again, that's those 2020 norms. So they're pretty high, and yet our kids, that's how they grew higher than expected. So that's like, I'm jumping up and down celebrating. I mean, that's amazing, truly, that we're showing that much growth. And the growth is the RIT score along the left side, and that RIT is a Rausch unit, and basically it's comparable to inches, if you will. You know, you're just measuring growth from year to year with a standard unit of measure. So as you get older, that is going to get smaller because you're not growing as much as you get older, but in the younger years, you're going to grow more. Okay. Sure. Okay, now we've got reading. And the fourth grade, I don't have winter 21 data for the fourth grade because they were third graders last year, and we didn't do third grade in winter. We did fall and spring because we started fall of 21 very on shaky ground. Remember, we started really slowly. I think we came in like half day, we were split into groups. This is right out of COVID, I think. Winter 20? No.
20.
Oh, sorry. Okay, wrong. No, winter 21. Been, yeah, so the fall of 20 was, yes, a staggered start.
Yeah.
Lots of classes, everything. So we didn't test right away. We tested like late into the fall, late, like November, and then we did a spring test. So that year we only did two MAP tests.
That sounds right.
So yeah. I don't have fourth grade data for a year there. In June, when I give you another update, we'll have spring data, so it'll be more complete. But the third grade and the fifth grade, you can look at that data and see that, you know, again, the 16th percentile to the 30th percentile for those third graders in reading. Wahoo! Mm-hmm. And those fifth graders, they stayed right at the 78th percentile. The average of that group, they are really, it's amazing. Any questions on that? You can go to the next one and show the bar graph. So then that shows the bar graph. Again, third grade exceeded, and fifth grade also exceeded by a little bit by the projected growth, again, based on those norms from the data from a long time ago, before COVID. Okay. All right, and then we go into the middle school. And the middle school for the winter to winter, I just have sixth grade because seventh and eighth grade, unfortunately, we had a COVID shutdown during our MAP testing week. And we never made it back up because when we got back, it was, it didn't happen. So
the window was closed.
So we will have spring data for you in June, like I said. But you can see the sixth grade in reading there, the achievement percentile 53 to 58 percentile again. Great growth. And you can see it below also.
Okay. And to clarify, like the window is literally closed. Like the testing people give us a time frame, right?
They give us a recommended time frame. So I can open the window back up as the district test coordinator. So I can open it up, close it, open it, close it, open it. But
Then you start pushing into the next when the next period of time anyway.
It's like a snowball and it gets bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. And so
Okay.
Sometimes we just have to say uncle and we're moving on. So and there's the math for you. 32nd to the 39th percentile with those sixth graders. So and their observed growth again down below. So I think we're celebrating that growth. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic growth. Okay, that was quick, but.
We like 5 slides.
You like 5 slides. Yes, I didn't give you the ninth grade data. I don't have ninth grade data in that form. So I have it in a different form if you really want to see it. You're like, what's the right answer?
Let me see, sorry about that.
just, how do we get out of this? Would you like to read?
Sure.
I'm going to give Becky the microphone for a moment.
Okay.
Because this is more about intervention, third through
eighth
grade.
Oh, yeah. That's right. This is where we want
to
go.
So this letter was submitted by Stephanie Pollack. Dear school board, I'm an interventionist for grades 3 through 7 this year, working primarily on helping students catch up in reading and math in both the elementary school and the middle school. I know that there has been talk of the district performing poorly academically this year. However, I was encouraged by the growth academic intervention students have made this year. Their classroom teachers and I have worked hard together to specifically target areas to help them grow academically. They're gaining more confidence in their reading and math skills every day, and they are more engaged with learning in the classroom setting. Students that come to intervention groups typically struggle with learning. Here is some MAP testing data from the elementary academic intervention students I work with, where I compare their growth from the fall of 2021 to the winter of 2022. Third graders, 100% of students showed growth. Average percentage of increase in math scores was 12.3%. Fourth graders, 90% of students showed growth, average percent of increase in reading scores, 7%. Fifth graders, 100% of students showed growth, average percent of increase in reading scores, 5%. These growth rates are higher than the MAP test predicted, especially for the third grade math group. And she really is fabulous. I enjoy her a lot. A few highlights from the middle school academic intervention students. Sixth graders, as of March 4th, 100% of academic intervention students that started out the year with D's and F's have been able to raise their grades to C's and above in all core subjects as we near the end of the third quarter. They also had an average increase of 6 points in reading and 8 points in math on the MAP test. Seventh graders, as of March 4th, 90% of the intervention students that had a C or higher, have a C or higher in math as we near the end of the third quarter. I just thought it was worth highlighting some of the learning and growth that is occurring in our schools every day. These kids have worked so hard and their grades and test scores are showing growth. You should be very proud of these kids. I know that I am. Sincerely, Stephanie Pollack.
Okay, so this is another, MAP provides a ton of different reports to share, to show data, and this is another way to look at the data. And these are percentiles. Basically, it gives you the count of the students, and this is the top bar graph is the fall, this last fall, and then the bottom one is the winter. So this is the ninth grade math group. So if you look at the numbers, I'm sorry, I'm a little slow here. You've got 27 students in the high average to high average range, so 77% of our students are in the average to high average range, and then in the winter it drops down to 66% of the students, 25 of them. So it was 27 in the fall and 25. So, you know, you've got a standard error of measure there, so it's still in the ballpark. Our kids are are doing really well. And that was math. So, and then the next slide shows reading. And reading in the fall, we had 29 students, or 78% of the students were in the average to high average range. And then in the winter, it went up to 82%, or 30% of the students. So we had one more student joined that group. So they're doing well. They are doing really well. So, and I really like the data we get from MAP, and I think it's a really valuable tool, mostly because it helps us to target our kids who need intervention. And Stephanie is just the perfect example of how that intervention is really, really working when we look at the data, and then we pull those kids and target interventions. So thank you for supporting those positions. They're just invaluable. So that's the MAP. Thank you, Becky. And then did you want to hear a little bit about AK Star? Or okay. All right. sorry. Okay, stop, exit full screen.
Do you want just the one pager, Bridget?
Sure, do you have that one pager?
Yeah.
Or you can see it?
I have it.
Is it the fact sheet?
The fact sheet?
Mm-hmm. It's something I wrote.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, I just have the fact sheet.
Can I share it with you?
Mm-hmm.
Or I can share.
I thought she was saying.
I can share.
Please share the board.
I think I'm getting the hang of this.
By all means.
I'm just going to share my little thing there. You guys will be able to see that. Can you see the whole thing, or shall I go to full screen? I guess it's. Okay, so basically. You guys know this already, that it's called the Alaska System of Academic Readiness. It's our new summative assessment for English, Language, Arts, and Math. And it's grades 3 through 9. And this will be our first time taking it. So I just went to the training in Anchorage. And just as an aside, we were given 18 months to roll out AMP. We were given 6 months to roll out PEAKS. And we were given about 1 month to roll out this test.
Oh,
so
nice.
It's going to be a wild ride, but it's going to be awesome because it's online and it's the same company that has is the vendor for our MAP assessments is the vendor for this new assessment. So it's similar in a lot of ways. So the students, I think, are going to be really comfortable. I mean, we are doing some practice tests. Starting those, we started them in the elementary school this week, and we're going to be starting them in the middle and high school right after spring break. So we'll do a couple practice tests. And let's see, then we've got the AK Science Assessment, and Katie mentioned a little bit about that from the curriculum review, or curriculum adoption, excuse me, on Friday, 5th, 8th, and 10th grade. And this assessment was field tested last spring. And this is a baseline year, and it's extremely challenging. I remember Miss Day talking about it last year in the field test, and she said it was extremely challenging even as a teacher looking at it. And it's just so different, new standards. And so anyway, I want to reiterate, not to parents, please don't freak out when you see scores. So there's going to be a huge learning curve here. So testing will happen, like Ms. Kahn said, April 12th through the 14th in the elementary school, and the middle school will be doing their testing April 5th through the 7th, and the high school will also be doing their testing the first week of April, but we haven't got those dates firmed up yet. We're sort of looking at the travel arrangements for Southeast Music Festival, and we don't want kids to be gone while we're trying to test them, so we might have to move it up a couple days, but we'll have that firmed up by tomorrow, I think. Let's see. I think that's, oh, yeah, three MAP tests this year and one summative. And then we're going to get the data from the MAP test and the AK Star test. Psychometricians are going to work their magic so that next year we will only have to take three tests, two MAP tests, and then the AK Star summative. It's not, the AK Star summative is not an adaptive test. It's just a fixed test, though. So it's a content standards test, not an achievement test. So there's some differences there too. Those are the overview. That's the basic overview. Does anybody have any questions or want more details?
I just have a question.
Yes, of course.
With all this data, what are some areas we need to concentrate on to help the kids catch up or, you know, get back where they need to be?
Where are some areas?
Yes, I mean, we need help with math or reading, or I mean, what are some areas we need to concentrate our efforts on to help the kids?
Well, I think that what you guys have been doing with regard to supporting an interventionist, like the positions interventionist in reading is key. Math, I think, is coming next. We are, I mean, you can kind of notice from the MAP scores to the MAP scores in math or not. Hi, yes.
No, and, keep going. You're great.
And
you're better at this
one. And yeah, so I think math is definitely, we've seen that in the last few years too. With the new math standards a few years ago, how we were like, oh my gosh, you know, we were trying to crunch all this information into a couple of years, and there was a real kind of a panic moment about 5 or 6 years ago with the math. But we're slowly getting there, you know, as we get our new math curriculum in the elementary school, and then it just starts to, you know, roll on up. So, but I think continued support of those interventionists and small class sizes small class sizes just can't be beat.
The two challenges from my building that we're ready is one, this regression of kind of behavior, and I'll say this because freshmen, but we've seen freshman behavior where they're acting like seventh graders as far as organization. I'm not talking about being goofy. Kids are goofy. But just the organization, the study habits, the willingness to stay after school, and that is absolutely just COVID related. And the second one we've talked a little bit about is this idea that students from medium to high social economic homes are doing fine. They're not as great as they were, they're doing fine. It's the kids, whether it's lower economic or other challenges they may have at home, they're just dropping. And it is the high school staff, we've had, you know, five or six kids are pursuing their GED, and we're just like, we've got a work session planned on the 25th. We're just trying to figure out what to do. That is national. When Ron Nose, the head of secondary school, started talking about this, people interrupted him with their applause when he was saying, like, we've got to fix this. This is a national thing. But we hate it for Petersburg. We know these kids. We know the issues. We know the family, and we're trying. So those are two things, and you're exactly right. It's the interventions. These kids really that have other challenges in their life are really falling off, and trying to bring them back up as well as keep our, you know, our top flyers flying high is the challenge. And people like Stephanie, who is just outstanding at what she does, and this is the first time we've had an intervention in my building since I've been here, I think. Yeah, I mean, we do intervention work, you know, we give teachers, but to have that extra person who comes in and can pull kids out, put them in, and stuff is absolutely making a big difference, and we appreciate the superintendent and Mrs. Kahn, because we split Stephanie with Mrs. Kahn. So
is there plans for, I know we always offer summer school, mm-hmm. is there plans for maybe a more intensive kind of summer school or a longer summer school session? I honestly don't know what summer school looks like at the secondary school, but at the elementary school, it's like a matter of a few weeks, like a couple times a week, like short amounts of time.
The issue becomes, honestly, it's attendance. I mean, people leave, I mean, it's, you can't make people go. So it comes down to that. And also just staffing, you know, people either aren't available or they're taking other coursework. So in a small town, it comes down to those two. Okay. Factors. Busing has helped the last summer that we did that. Actually, the last two, we've done that. And I do think that helps. You know, sometimes if people just need to have some support getting back and forth, I think that would be something we would do. There's a percentage of the ARP funds that needs to be spent on that. We would like to spend as much money as we could on summer school, to be honest, or even Saturday schools or whatever. I mean, you know, that's what it can be designed for. It literally just comes down to, how do we get them here? How do we keep them here? And do we have the staff for it? So it's kind of a combination of all those things.
It snowballs with a few other issues in Petersburg too, because those secondary students are likely staying at home caring for younger siblings.
That happens, or other jobs, or they're fishing or whatever. So we run into that a lot, especially with secondary. So it's challenging.
So the maps...
Rattle moderate school.
The maps data, will at the end of this year, or every time the state gives us data, or I guess it's on the report we get for our kid too, but tells us what's going on in the state as well as nationally. But those numbers that they're comparing are comparing to the old, 5 years ago, not today, correct?
Correct.
We're not going to see on there, our kids are in the 29th percentile, but the rest of Alaska is where? Today. We don't know that, right? Oh. I'm curious, I guess, and I don't know how you get that information, but it would be curious to see not trying to justify that we have kids that are below the 50th percentile. However, I suspect that in some areas it's worse, and so, you know, they're trying to find the silver lining here. I mean, we'd like those to be closer to 50%, right?
Right.
But,
Yeah. And what is going to be great about this new AK Star is that we're collecting the data this spring from all the schools in Alaska that are taking this assessment, and then the third MAP assessment in May, they're going to be using that data also to combine that to get an Alaska picture.
That'll be interesting.
It'll be great. Then we will have Alaska data, based on our students. So it's going to be really important for all of our kids to participate across the state. They're really encouraging, they being the Department of Education is, you know, and Commissioner Johnson's really encouraging the students and families to take those assessments.
I will say a lot of several meetings that I've been in recently, and a lot of the research that's happening as well, is this whole sort of kind of COVID effect.
Yeah.
And that it isn't just, well, not nobody's saying it's just anything, but I mean it's a more broad issue to help prop our kids up and move them forward, that it's not just a math issue or a reading issue. There are all these other pieces, whether it's housing insecurity, whether it's people's job, whether it's just trauma response from the last couple of years of life. And there's a lot of social emotional issues that people are dealing with, mental health issues in homes. It's kind of an all-encompassing sort of thing. And so they're actually cautioning schools to, you know, be careful that you don't, it's not just about hammering on the math. I'm not saying that's what you're saying, but, you know, it's not just about, like, the skills themselves. We have to look at the whole picture. You know, if kids aren't coming to school, why aren't they coming to school? It could be a wide variety of reasons, and it is more all-encompassing than just one piece. So I think that's been our challenge, is trying to talk about how can we utilize the staff that we have that are available to us right now to the best of our ability, and how do we help kind of reconnect some of our kids to our schools, to their educational process overall. We do have some kids and some families that are pretty disconnected, you know, and so it's a big topic. So we would love to beef up our summer school process if we can get enough people to be available to it and help get our kids there, you know. And how do we do that? Maybe there's different ways to engage them. We've tried to do some different things there too, that you don't just want a kid on a summer day hammering on flashcards or whatever. Not that that's what we're doing, but you know, you want to have a more robust program that maybe encompasses some of the things that Katie does in her program, you know. And we've done that where it's not, you can't get outside to do your reading, let's go for a walk and do this, let's encompass, you know, some sort of science activities and some STEM activities, and let's kind of put all those pieces together so that it's more robust in that sense, and they're a little more connected. So it's a pretty big topic. Yeah, it's a pretty big topic.
Yeah, it's a very big topic. And just to again reiterate that our kids made growth during all of that, during the whole storm. So
yeah.
I think our teachers are amazing, and just getting kids there as much as we could, you know, with the mitigation strategies we employed worked, and we had kids present.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't learning so much online, so yeah. I think the proof was in the pudding there. So
I'll say too, just hearing you talk about meeting kids where they're at, the say Maslow before we bloom, right? Let's make sure we're meeting their basic needs, keeping them safe. It's really nice to hear our leadership and our teachers not just talk about it, but act it out. Like, mm-hmm. It means a lot. As a person that works with a lot of these kids, knowing that they're going to, like, these lovely ladies in front of me, and have you all helping them and making sure that they're supported, not just academically. It's really nice to hear and see happen. Yeah. So thank you all. For being awesome.
Yeah, that's why they grew.
That's why they grew, right?
That's why they grew, these, yes, lovely ladies.
Yeah.
And they are telling us also, kind of cautioning us, I guess, in that sense that we can't stop working on this. It's not going, I mean, it's sort of like the masking. I think I said this today. I mean, you take away this, it's that's one thing. It's not the whole picture. You know, it's the same thing with the child's academic program. And we're going to be dealing with the effects of this for years. Like, this is it's huge. It's huge. So I think it's also helping us not completely panic. We've got to get them to the 70th, like next month, you know, or whatever. I think that's also, we have to take that into account, you know, when we're keeping our goals and our reality clear, but keep moving forward. I mean, each year, because it's going to take time.
Any other questions or comments?
Thank you.
Thanks,
Georgia. Okay, we'll move on now to policies. 15.3, our policy updates. In our first reading, we have a few policies that we're looking to update. I'll make a motion to, we've got policy, board policy 1115, which is the employee involuntary use of electronic and social media.
or policy 3516, which is a video surveillance. And this is a new policy. E? Is that a subset?
It's like an exhibit.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I... 6164.4, which is tech use agreements, and then board BP or BB.
Board bylaw.
Thank you. Board bylaw 9012, communication to and from the board, and it's just updating. So I'll make a motion to adopt these policies as presented in their first reading. Could I have a second?
I'll second.
Motion been made and seconded by Meg. Do we have any discussion about all or any of the specific ones?
You want me to do any, or
highlight of any of them?
Kara and Carrie could also.
No, I was going to say that I think you said at the last meeting, and just to reiterate that there are policies that the state school board sort of suggests we make changes, and then like the electronic and social media, that was also just like moving with the times. Mm-hmm. Video surveillance, I think our last iteration of that was before we really had videos, like it wasn't really a thing that people did or schools did everywhere all the time. Yeah. Technology, all those things are changing with the times.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, anyway. There were things sort of weighing in on, you know, phone use was sort of the one technological kind of emphasis. It's like, oh my goodness, we have so many more devices and you know, issues for people to.
And we realized in one of those conversations, you know, it's like, oh, our policy says, you know, is that one of these, that cell phones are not allowed in school. It's like, oh, well, okay, because I know that, you know, teachers use them with kids. So we were just updating something. Going with the times and modifying and updating and all those good things.
And I think also just the advent of social media has really created kind of some challenges for lots of people in lots of businesses and areas, but certainly for school people as well, as just, and especially in small towns, it can be challenging to kind of, you want to find the things that are protective to people, but also help create some boundaries there for personal and professional use. So I think it's really important. And then we went ahead and just sent this out to staff just to kind of really wrap their mind around that. Even now, you know, it just, there's a lot of people in those, or even thinking about how many people are you friends with, and how do you make those decisions, and do you wait till they're out of high school? And, you know, I mean, just those things that you think, oh yeah, but this is my neighbor or my niece or my niece's friend, you know, and then all of a sudden you're kind of, you know, inadvertently, you know, going down a pathway that you need to just be really cautious about. So, so I think that's important. And it does tie into the professional boundaries policy that we adopted this last fall. So it's just a lot of work that's being done in schools to just really provide protection for people, for staff members too, so.
Yeah. Okay. Any other additional comments? Motion's been made and seconded by Meg. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Next, we'll move on to our second reading. Let me see, where am I?
Here we are.
Sorry, I'm a little foggy today.
Hang in there.
This is where we'll be doing our public hearing, for the policies that we passed previously on the first reading last month. So I will recess to hold a public meeting on, but Board Policy 3510, Board Policy 6114.4, Board Policy 0520, Board Policy 1340, and Board Policy 6146.3. I'll recess. Public hearing, does anyone have anything, comments, like to testify about those board policies? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing, and I will make a motion to approve the policy updates as presented in the second and final reading. Could I have a second?
I'll second that.
Motion's been made and seconded by Carrie. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Next, we'll move on to additional comments from board members.
I'll make a quick comment.
Sure.
I should have prepared myself. I've been thinking a lot about this last month and how we move forward with COVID and with meeting kids' needs. And I feel compelled to say how, especially in the last 2 weeks, how grateful I am. We have the opportunity to come in here to testify, to share our opinion, to be heard. That we are in a place where that is welcome, that that's allowed, that you can do it with almost no restriction, say whatever you want, and what a great place to live that we can do that. And we have so many opportunities in this community to participate in our kids' education, whether it's testifying at a board meeting or volunteering in a classroom, or being on PI, or whatever it is. And we are fortunate, maybe even lucky. And I appreciate when people volunteer. I'm a volunteer, whether it's their 5 minutes or 3 minutes here or something else. And I think it's important to remember that's a wonderful right that we have. And to be mindful that there are people struggling in a lot of ways. And, you know, this is really small in the grand scheme of things. So that's it. I sincerely hope we're really moving on and we can focus on our kids' education, our kids meeting their needs that we couldn't meet because we needed to keep them healthy first. So that's it. Thanks.
Any other additional comments from board members? Okay, future agenda items. So we're going to hear from what class next month?
Is it Mr. Briner's class?
Second grade.
Second grade.
Mammals. Mm-hmm.
Mammals,
yeah. Oh, and maybe close up. We'll see.
Close up. Yes.
Those little voices were adorable.
Yes,
were,
that
I just have to
cute.
Say, I almost made me a little emotional.
Yeah, love it.
Okay, and then of course we'll have our second round of board policies.
we are doing every couple of weeks on policy, so we have one tomorrow, and we're just trying to keep
you guys
on a 2 week. And just
and then hopefully an update on, I don't know if we'll have anything for negotiations, that might be too soon anyway, so yeah.
Right, yeah. And then I guess just the work session, is that Friday, is that the 8th tomorrow?
Yes.
Yep. The 8th, April 8th, okay, so if people can plan for that Friday for a work session.
What time?
usually after school, maybe 3:30, is that
good? Well, on a Friday, Friday.
Friday.
Yeah, I would say, I guess it depends on people's work schedules and life,
yeah.
too, but I mean, if we could be like 2:30,
mm-hmm.
that gives us a good hour, maybe hour and 15.
Do 2:30?
Maybe plan for that? 2:30?
Yeah.
If that'll work.
And
then we can get things out to you guys before that and then have that work session and then prepare for the board meeting. So.
That's
for this. I won't actually be there for that.
Science curriculum?
Yeah. Science.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The most.
True.
I'll see the presentation. Yeah. I have a staff out that week, so.
Okay. With that, we are going to go ahead and move on to our executive session. So I will make a motion to recess to executive session, discuss superintendent principal evaluations and their contracts. Could I have a second?
I'll second.
Motion's been made and seconded by Katie. All those in favor? Aye.
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 Aye. Sorry.
Opposed? We are now headed into executive session at 7:53.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
that was a bad 7:53.